We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
And the happiest of Mondays to you. If Friday was the most optimistic Friday of every calendar year in South Louisiana, you know what today is. The streak is over. It's a rejoicing Monday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off on 103.7 The Game. Those four notes, they strike a chord. They did in Tuscaloosa, and they do with you today. Excited to be with you for the next 2.5 hours. You know, we'll be LSU Bama heavy. I was there. It was wild. I've got takes. I'm going to launch right into them. But we want your calls early and often in today's program. You exercise demons. YP, you people out there in listener land, a new streak can start, as I also suggested to you on Friday. And this is something that, quite frankly, I wasn't sure was going to happen while Nick Saban roamed that sideline in T-Town. It did, and it was incredible. Let us know what you thought. Let us know how you're feeling today. 706-01-1-1. Joe Burrow cements the Heisman. But I'm here to tell you, the lasting story and player performance for me will be Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's been a long time since anyone has put up 4 scrimmage touchdowns in a ball game against Saban and the Tide. 3 on the ground, 1 through the air. And he did it in so many different ways. And it strikes me as incredibly ironic, maybe even incredibly appropriate, that an undersized, under-recruited kid from Baton Rouge was routinely seeking out Pat Surtain, a megastar recruit that LSU missed out on, and certainly a talent, no question about it. He was seeking Surtain out and running through those weak-ass arm tackles all game long near the sideline, turning 4-yard gains into 8-yard gains, stretching should-be fourth downs into moving the chains, hitting the circle button, spin cycling on people, and scoring touchdowns. Number 22 did things in Tuscaloosa that everybody dreamed Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis would do. Those defenses for Bama certainly were better than the one that Clyde faced on Saturday, but the resolve of 22 was absolutely incredible. The streak has come to an end. Joe Burrow gets the one player, one shoulder pad carry off from Acadiana area native Tyler Shelvin. I've never seen that before. That's a large man, 72. Shout out to you. And now the Tigers have an opportunity to really, I would say, slay the Giants, but they are the Giant right now. LSU is atop the totem pole in college football. And every bit of frustration that you felt since November 5, 2019, just like that, it goes away. And just like that, there are bigger fish to fry. You start thinking again about Atlanta. Tigers haven't been since 2011. Heck, they can lose a game the rest of November, and they're still going to the SEC title game. You start thinking about the college football playoff. First time in program history that LSU has a chance to crash that party. And then you start thinking about keeping everyone on board that led you to this point. It didn't take an hour after the game for reports to surface that LSU was in extensive conversations with Joe Brady about extending his contract and backing up the Brinks truck, some $1.5 million, it's been suggested, to pay a man who is not even your offensive coordinator. It's all happening for LSU football right now. It all happened inside that stadium on Saturday. And I'll tell you a little bit about what I witnessed and why I'm about 85% on the voice meter today. But again, want your phone calls as well. 706-0111. It's my fourth time to Bryant Denny Stadium. First time in a non-working capacity, but you still witness the same things. In fact, when you're sober, you understand everything you're interpreting. What I saw all day long, before that game even, in town Saturday, was not nearly the hostile crowd and environment that I had become accustomed to. You go to Florida, Auburn, Alabama, you know what you're getting into. You understand. They can all fit 100,000 plus. Their fans have a little something extra for you. It gets a little nasty and chippy. You understand that. Other places you go, it's a little more hospitable. Georgia, Tennessee, in a lot of ways I would say Ole Miss. You're not as much playing the head on a swivel game. I found it wasn't like that. I think that there was an understanding throughout that town that it was going to be a different type of game and that LSU had a chance this time around and that maybe Alabama would struggle to keep up. And we learned in that opening drive, Tua Tagovailoa inexplicably puts it on the carpet. I don't know that he was going in for a touchdown run, not with some of his relative limited mobility, but Tua puts it on the ground early. LSU takes advantage and hangs up 33 points by the half. And so this offense pushed LSU to a height that we haven't seen in this game ever. The Tigers played keep away, and Alabama certainly started to push the envelope. And by the time those epileptic seizure-style red and white lights were flashing in the second half, by the time Dixieland Delight was blaring through that place, trust me, you couldn't catch it. I would imagine during the TV timeout, we got every bit of that. And their lyrics for that song, they're not as creative as Neck, but they're not fond of every major opponent they have, and LSU's one of them. And they let you know that. That place started to rock toward the end, and there started to become some doubt. And every time doubt seeped in, it was either 9 or 22 that stomped it out. I mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire for me, the lasting story of the game, the player performance. But, Clint, I will give you your props right now. Joe Burrow, on the ground was an incredible difference maker in that game. You called it. And some of it was by design. Some of it was pocket breaks down. I'll let you take a bow, and we'll talk more about it during Sink or Swim, because I'm going to give you some more credit on the other side of this break. But you were right. Burrow with his legs made a huge difference, and maybe even in a way that you haven't thought of, my friend.
I did not see what was coming in that performance where he held like 64 yards out of the 166 on the ground. That was impressive.
But there's one thing that maybe you're not even thinking of, and this play did not win the ball game. Not to the extent that Clyde's late touchdown did. Not to the extent that Joe's scramble did around the left tackle to get close to the goal line and set up Clyde on that last touchdown. But on that same final scoring drive, I've been watching a lot of football in my life. You probably have too. I don't know that I've ever seen a play quite like the fake quarterback draw pass over the middle to Ja'Marr Chase. There isn't a lot that happens in a football stadium that literally makes my jaw drop. From a schematic, X's and O's standpoint, that was breathtaking. And Joe Burrow running the football all afternoon into the early evening set it up. I mean, he took two steps forward toward the line of scrimmage, nosed right up toward the line, and he didn't Tebow pass it, you know, one of those little teardrops that goes about 4 yards. He threw a deep pop pass, post pattern style, to Chase. That was one of the most revolutionary football plays I've ever seen. Burrow, Brady, that offense, they had it going. Defensively, LSU got as much pressure on the quarterback as I've seen maybe all season. It only resulted in one sack. And yeah, Tua got his 400. But LSU's defense absolutely made a dent in that ball game. And the Tigers now undefeated. They will be the number one team in the country tomorrow night. And then an opportunity comes where maybe, just maybe, this game happens again. And that is what I want to talk about on the other side of this break. Big show today. Gus Kattengill hopping aboard at 4:30. Ruffin Rodriguez at 5:15. Yeah, I saw Ruffin out there on the strip in Tuscaloosa as well. And then James Buers, we have playoff brackets. Select, non-select, we'll talk both sides from 6 until 6:30. Stick with us. Big program today, and we're just getting started. After a brief timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Ben Love. For-
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
First off, I think that have to give LSU a lot of credit. I think they really played well in the game. They made plays when they had to make plays on offense, and you know, they're a very, very good team. Great crowd, great atmosphere. You know, thank our fans for the support.
Roll Tide, what? Oh, I can't say the rest, but I bet you've heard it. By this point, there's Nick Saban tied on the losing end to LSU, first time since 2011. And I hate to even go down this road today. My guy Ryan Clark went down this road on Twitter right after the game. But LSU Nation didn't like it. That guy's so real. And he's so right on in so many ways that he looks at things. I completely and utterly saw it the same. Let me lay it out for you. I'll explain. And then I'll ask you to call us up and participate. It takes nothing away from LSU and what they did. The demons they exercised. But here's a reality for you. I don't need to watch tomorrow night to know that LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson will in some order be 1, 2, and 3. In fact, I would imagine it'll be LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, 1, 2, 3. I racked my brain trying to figure out who deserves to be number 4. Or maybe who just would be number 4. Forget about should, who would. You can offer up suggestions for the following. Georgia. You can offer up Minnesota, Baylor, both still undefeated after this past weekend. You could talk Oregon, Utah, Oklahoma, who survived. But you also at least have to entertain the idea, of Alabama. Who's going to be number 4? Who should be number 4? And not as much now, but as the first week in December. And so it was one of my very first thoughts after I exited the stadium in Bryant-Denny. Are we sure Bama's buried here? Are we sure that they're done? Because while this doesn't feel like 2011, it's possible that you could have that again. And Ryan Clark's take, former LSU Tiger, is, I don't know that I want that again. I'm with them. Why would you want to have to do that again? It feels like LSU shouldn't have to do that again, and hopefully they won't. But to think that it's impossible it could happen, oh boy, I think that's a bit short-sighted. Penn State eliminated themselves. We are not going to the playoffs. That was established with the loss to Minnesota this past weekend. And I think we're going to continue to see teams axe themselves off the list. And so follow me here, because right after the music, I'm going to officially get into the question, and I think you know what's coming. Exciting and new. Your Sink or Swim question of the day. Do you think Alabama still finds a way to weasel into the college football playoffs? Call us up. Let us know. 706-0111. I will tell you that I think it's imminently possible. I will tell you that right now, I'm actually going to swim. I'm going to tell you that they do find a way in. Not that they deserve it. The strength of schedule isn't there. But that last touchdown, God, it means a lot. Because on paper now, for those that didn't watch and internalize the whole thing, some of those in the college football playoff selection committee, which if they didn't watch it, they probably shouldn't be there, they're going to look at a 5-point game to the number one team in the country. Alabama's obviously neck and neck. I'm just not sure that's close. LSU was the superior team in that game from wire to wire. But I will offer this up to you. There is one surefire way to ensure that Alabama doesn't make the Final Four. And none of you will want to hear this, but I'm just going to say it because it's true. Georgia beats LSU in Atlanta. Georgia's going and LSU's going, and there ain't no way, no how, that you'll have three in from the SEC, not when Clemson and Ohio State are virtually just on deck, right? They're just waiting for their hit, their turn at the plate. So again, LSU can lose a game between now and December and still go to Atlanta. The same is true for Georgia, but if they both run the table, and by the way, I do think the Tigers right now would probably be 10.5, 12.5, somewhere in that range, point favorites over Georgia. But if somehow, someway Georgia beats LSU, then those are the two that would go, and Bama's out. Short of that, and short of Auburn beating Alabama, I don't think you're going to be able to just completely bury the tide here. It sucks, but I believe it's a reality. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Max, enough of me. What do you think?
Ben, I told you, purple and gold Thor was going to be in the house. Did you see it?
It was magnificent, brother. Look, good job not going fat Thor.
Hey, I got a few pounds on me. But I stood next to the band director, and I said, if we win, we're playing neck, right? And he said, the only way we can play neck is if Donald Trump tweets, let the band play. So I started screaming, who's got Twitter? Who's got Twitter?
But, he might have engaged honestly, with you. He's been known to do that.
I know, right? I was excited. Wish I had Twitter at the moment. But Auburn, I honestly believe we've shown they're vulnerable this year. And Auburn put up a better fight than they did. We got lazy in the third quarter. Joe to Chase would have been another touchdown on top of it.
Yeah.
If you listen to Coach O this afternoon, he said Stingley only got burnt on that last one play touchdown because they practiced something that he wasn't coached on.
Well, there's something else that happened too, Max. We got a bunch of calls stacked up here, so hate to kneecap you. But if you watch the replay, it's very clear. The coaching staff is still barking commands to the young man when he gets burnt the first time around by Devontae Smith. So and frankly, it looked like Tua clap. The whole LSU team looked to the sideline because they thought that Bama was going to go do a look at me to their sideline. And that time around, when Tua clapped, he got the football. And 24 had no chance, right? If you're even, you're leaving. He was done. They burnt 24 more than just that once at the end, though. Even if you take out the play I'm talking about, that was an interesting part of the ball game. Saban went after Stingley, and he lived to tell about it. One of them wasn't Derek's fault, but a couple of them, some really good receivers, got over on him. All right, let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chad, thank you for waiting. Does Bama still weasel in?
And you just said weasel in. I don't believe so. I can't believe we're talking about the last touchdown, Ben. Everybody in America watched this game and know it was more than a touchdown that we beat them by physically. Tua played the whole game, threw for over 350 yards, played the whole game, was in Tuscaloosa. I see if Oregon wins out, they get in, maybe even Oklahoma if they win the Big 12 with one loss. I just don't see Alabama doing it, man, bro. And I, like you said, the only way they get in also, the only way they wouldn't get in also is LSU lost to Georgia. It'd be them four, man. But thank you, Ben.
You got it, Chad. And I don't think they deserve to get there. I don't think they deserve to get there in 11 either, but they did. They knocked the door down, and LSU had to pay for it. This time around, I wonder if history repeats itself. Clint told me that we had on a familiar voice here on Acadiana Sports Station, The Voice, who was one of the founding members of a show, First Cup, that we used to have on the weekends here. Pretty sure I ran into The Voice at St. Thomas More's Cougar Stadium a couple of weeks ago. So to The Voice, and no, not Chris Blair, give us a call back. We got time for you. 706-0111. It was an intriguing game, and I think I heard Max say that LSU went quiet in the third quarter. Part of that was because Saban's offense finally decided to do the smart thing and let Najee Harris start to tote that thing. He is so good. And for me, if Bama runs it more in the first half, again, if ifs and nuts were, okay, you know that one. If ifs and buts were, there we go. I just think Alabama waited way too long to try and assert themselves on the ground because they were good. They're very good in the third quarter. But schematically, that's part of the reason LSU was better in this ballgame. LSU out-schemed Bama. It wasn't just Burrow. It wasn't just Clyde. They had a better scheme. Offensively, they pressed the right buttons more often than Alabama did. All right, now we got The Voice with us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Welcome to the show. How do you react to what you saw Saturday?
So I've seen a lot of LSU teams, good teams, but this team, Ben, this team's got swag, man. This team's got swag. They have so much swag, they got into Bama's head. Listen, nobody, you hear me? Nobody goes into Alabama and beats Alabama. This team has got swag. Yes, I think Alabama will probably be number four tomorrow night, but only for a couple of weeks because things will all play out. This committee has to look at, you know, the Pac-12. They have to look at the Big Ten. They,
Alabama is confused about this team. We have swag. We haven't had in a long, long time. Bebe's the one that created it, and it's just beautiful to see that they got into Bama's head.
They did, and I have a follow-up to that. Thanks for the dial, brother.
All right.
If you watched after the game, this one's been making the rounds on social media. You've got Grant Delpit. You've got a number of the freshman class that was over there as well, including my guy Marcel Brooks, who looked pretty good while he was in that ball game. They went over to the recruits that were there on Bama OVs and unofficial visits, and you could see them saying, come on over. Come put these colors on. You need to come here. That is absolutely phenomenal. You want to talk about swag? We go into your stadium. We beat you. We might be going home with your girl, and we're telling your recruits to come and play with us. I don't know that you'll ever see that again. Yeah, they got a lot of swag. I don't know yet that I'm willing to tell you this team is as talented overall and as good as the 2011 group. There's no Honey Badger. But then again, 2011 didn't have Joey Heisman. And right now, with that swag, with that quarterback, there's a chance this 2019 team might take over a title that I've already given out in my lifetime. 2011 is the best LSU football team I've ever seen. And I would put a lot of money to say that they're the best ever. Sorry, 58. Sorry, 03. Sorry, 07. 11 has been the group. This one has a chance to be even better. It's incredible. All right, we'll come right back in. We might talk some Saints, but I got a last-second bug in my ear that Gus Kattengill is running long on his radio show. So, shucks, we might have to keep taking your LSU-Bama reaction. Either way, we'll keep having fun. And after this timeout, you'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Jim Rome's got opinions.
The real loser of the Adam Gase Bowl was Adam Gase. Because it wasn't just that the Jets lost to the Dolphins, it was how they lost. They got worked by the Dolphins. They look like a worse team than the team that is actually trying to be the worst team. You can clown the Dolphins all you want, but at least they battled for each other and for their coach. The Jets did neither.
The Jim Rome Show, weekdays 11 a.m. to 2 on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Holiday season right around the corner. It is time to get in the spirit. And at Delta Media, we've got you covered with Louisiana's Christmas Channel. Make sure to download the free mobile app today on iPhone or Android, and then make sure you have all the Christmas music you need right at your fingertips. You can also listen live right now at LouisianaChristmasChannel.com and enjoy all the great Christmas music with a little Cajun flair whenever the spirit of the season hits you.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This time last week, our man Gus Kattengill tried to spit some facts on the Saints, but his infant son didn't allow for that. Too much crying in the back seat of the car. Well, this time the kid won full out. Gus won't even come aboard, so I'm just having fun. Gus is doing a little OT radio in the Big Easy. I imagine folks there are still melting down over the Saints' meltdown against the Falcons. And yes, we will get there. We will touch on the embarrassing loss to the Dirty Birds, but why I don't agree with my compadre, RP3. I'll share those thoughts later in the program. But we're talking LSU-Bama, and we need to keep the fun flowing. What'd you make of the game? Do you think Bama somehow slithers into the Final Four still? That's our sink or swim question. And what's next for LSU? We want your calls and your thoughts on any and all of those subjects. 706-0111. And wouldn't you know it, Frank is waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, let's leave the Saints out of this. Let's just be LSU-centric here. How happy were you Saturday night?
Like a clam in mud. thought Joe Brady's offense was on point, and I have to do this because I know my nephew is listening, and I'm the one that turned him on to this radio station. So, Howard, I'm going to do this for you.
Hey, everybody in Tuscaloosa, We took that game. This is our house. This is our team. Go Tigers.
And Frank is out. You got to put that man right up there. We'd rack him if it were Rome. We'd put him on the board if it were the White Sox. But put him wherever you need to put him. Just shouted out his kinfolk and gave a little Coach O impersonation. Clint, you're no stranger to that type of talk. You okay with what we just heard there from Frank?
I'm more than okay with it. You know, it's nowhere near.
That was a segue for you to go Coach O voice, by the way.
So, oh, definitely. We'll go Tigers. That's how you do that, Frank. Anytime, anywhere, brother.
Well done, sir. Well done. We'll take more of your calls. Hell, give an impersonation if you'd like. 706-0111. I dove into some of my big picture bullet point thoughts, but there are a few other things that I really left that game impressed by, and I'll share those with you now. Again, Burrow's going to win the Heisman, and he should. He didn't go in and rip it out of Tua's chest, Indiana Jones style, quite the way that Derrick Henry did Leonard Fournette 4 years ago. It wasn't that dramatic. I know that Tua padded stats late, but Cat did throw for 400 yards. And I don't want to hear about this playing on one leg stuff. He looked awfully good to me. LSU had its best pass rushing game of the season, for my 2 cents, and only officially got home once. Yeah, he didn't take off and run a lot like Burrow did. But inside the pocket, Tua, for me, was magnificent in that ball game. So what I will tell you is that Burrow put himself right there to win the Heisman. He's on the cusp. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a performance for the ages and deserves to be thrown into the mix with what he did in that game with Jacob Hester, Mr. Fourth Down, against Florida. You're going to tell me one's more dramatic than the other just because it's fourth down? I'm not buying that. And that's no disrespect to Hester, who'd probably be the first to start throwing bouquets to Clyde. And so those two offensively, it was hard not to be impressed. I never cease to be impressed by number one. LSU's got a trio of great receivers. And Thaddeus Moss made a tremendous play. Kind of hard for me to imagine he was actually pushed out. But hey, once he reestablished, no doubt, Randy's kid did Randy things. Pro style, 2 feet. But I will tell you that Ja'Marr Chase is well on his way to being LSU's best receiver since OBJ. He is remarkable. And he does it to every single big-name opponent that LSU plays. So LSU offensively, I thought really they were clicking. They went dormant for a tad in the third quarter. But it's by and large because, well, they couldn't convert on a couple of key third downs. And Bama was able to play some keep away. Bama started going to the ground. Najee Harris had success, and credit the Tide that they didn't try to throw their way back into this and only throw their way back in. But there were some other star players in this ball game. Stingley had one of his worst goes. There was an injury at one point to Fulton that kept him out for a bit. There was an injury and a blatant late hit by a Bama O-lineman to Kerry Vincent Jr. that had him out for the remainder of the second half. And so for me, there were so many young players that for LSU had to star in this football game. And when you think about Cam Ward out there playing as often as he did, you think about all the DBs that had to go out there, and you know what? It's time for you to man up on Waddle. It's time for you to man up on Jerry Jeudy, who had some drops of his own. Tigers went down the line defensively, and it was absolutely incredible that some of these guys kept Tua in this offense behind the chains, that they kept getting pressure, and that they forced 2 fourth downs on Bama's last, second-to-last scoring drive, aside from that bomb. They made Bama burn the clock that eventually ended the ball game. So just amazing to me that this defense did what they had to when necessary, and your true freshman kicker gives you 2 clutch trifectas as well. Pretty holistic team effort. All right, let's get back out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Bo, welcome to the show. What you got on your mind?
Bro, number one for offense was great, but K-Baby on defense was shut down. If you go back and watch that game, he didn't allow one pass completed to him. He put himself back in the first round. Man, I don't even know what to say. What a great night. Marcel Brooks, bro, he's climbing up my favorite Tiger list already.
He's awfully good.
It's going to be a special season, Ben.
Hey, look, we're well on the way. 9-0, I think the runaway number one team in the country, and they've got a little leash at this point. If you thought Texas and winning in Austin bought this team some rope, they got plenty of it right now. But I'm thinking with as competitive as they are, the kind of swag they have, Bo, I don't think they'll hang themselves with it.
It's all in that. All gas, no brakes. Let's go.
There it is. Bo, thanks for the call. K-Baby, Christian Fulton, certainly one of his best efforts of the season. And I was wrong. You got to be able to say that, right? If you host the Sports Talk radio show and you have one shred of decency, you have to be able to say those three words sometimes, right? I was wrong. I thought that Saban and this offense would attack Fulton. I thought that they would run scared for Derek Stingley Jr., and they went oppo. And in some ways, it could have been worse. Jerry Jeudy had multiple touchdown drops in that ball game. Now, Bama went and scored points on those possessions anyway, but there were a couple of very deep touchdowns that number four let go through his fingers, and that was something to see. Now, I know that we could play that game back and forth, right? I understand that. There were multiple plays where Burrow had number one, number six, streaking down the sideline, right up the middle, and either didn't see him or didn't quite have enough time. So LSU put 46 points on the board and absolutely could have scored more. What a time we live in. 9-6? Not even a little bit. Clint, that might have been the other place where I was a touch wrong. I told you I liked the under in this one a good bit. Well, what had happened was 87 points. So this one was played at a shootout pace. LSU played keep away. Bama pushed the envelope, kept turning two-score deficit into one-score deficit. And I'll tell you this as well. I was way up in the nosebleeds, way up there, corner pocket of an end zone. And it was probably half and half. LSU-Bama, where I was, which was not par for the course in that stadium. And while there was hooping and hollering from the purple and gold, that noise was being returned summarily in the third quarter. And there really wasn't much you could say or do. Bama absolutely had everybody at least thinking, okay, what happens next? But the fact that number nine is on your side, it changes the equation. It really does. And it reminds you of a number nine that's playing for the Saints right now. Of course, not his finest hour or 3 hours yesterday. I do want to talk about that game. So why don't we huddle up one final time in this hour, and we'll do exactly that. We'll keep taking your calls. LSU over Bama. What comes next for the Tigers? But I want to get into the Saints' performance because I've got some thoughts that you may or may not agree with. But I believe in them. It's America. I'm going to express them. And after this brief timeout, that's exactly what you'll get. More Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Everybody flying high with the Bayou Bengals finally beating Bama and taking over control in the SEC West. You know we'll keep beating that path on today's program. Ruffin Roderick joins us less than a half hour from now. And we'll talk high school football playoff brackets. 6 to 6:30, we're talking playoffs with James Buers. But right about now, I don't want to neglect that Saints ball game. It was embarrassing. It should give you some legitimate reason for concern and hesitation, but it's not time to get overly concerned. And I'll tell you why. 26-9, when you were favored by two touchdowns to a 1-7 team, I'm going to tell you why it's not the be-all, end-all, and why it's not time to overreact. The Chiefs lost at Tennessee yesterday. That's a Titans team that was starting Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. The Chiefs, last year's NFL darlings, are 6-4. The Rams, I think they were people's darlings as well last year. You may recall they went to the Super Bowl. Sore subject, I know. They lost at Pittsburgh yesterday starting another backup, Mason Rudolph. The Rams are 5-4. The Chargers won 12 games last year. They're 4-6. Miami, 1-7. Miami, who's looked 10 times worse than the 1-7 Falcons this year, went on the road and beat previously 5-4 Indy yesterday. The reality is in the NFL, if you're not ready, this can happen. So absolutely, yesterday in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome was a poignant reminder that if you don't have it strapped up and you're not ready to go between the ears, you can get beat. But it's not a disgrace that means they're screwed. Come on now. This isn't college football. A sport where, depending on who you are, you can't lose once during the season. It's the NFL. They play 16 of these games. The Saints are still in prime position to be in the playoffs. You would still have to like their chances of getting toward a first-round bye. It's not going to be gifted to them. The game against San Fran is even more important now, and you have to win the games you're supposed to moving forward. So, yeah, yesterday put some pressure on you for the remainder of your regular season. And, yes, it's a reminder that you can get caught slipping if you're not on your A game. It's the NFL. And last year's Chiefs-Rams game, we were all told, was the next coming of football. This is the way the sport's going to be played. These are two dominant teams. Okay, well, they're a combined 11-8 right now. The Saints are just fine. I think we saw against Arizona that Drew Brees is back to where he needs to be. I think we saw enough yesterday to know that Alvin Kamara is back to where he needs to be. The injuries are the primary concerns with this Saints team. Those questions have been answered. Now, there is one area that I'll point out to you. And for all the talk about the Falcons being able to run the football, going over 100 collectively in the Saints, hey, that usually doesn't happen. It's the other line that was most bothersome for me. The Saints' offensive line, about this time last year, shut it down for a few weeks. Yeah, they had a lot of injuries. This year, they're not as battered and bruised. They were just bad and got beat up yesterday by the Falcons' defensive front. Nothing exotic about it. The Falcons' defense took it to the Saints' offensive line and hit Drew Brees, if I read this correctly, hit Brees 17 times yesterday. That can't happen. That is a big red flag. And if that happens again this season, the Saints could be in a lot of trouble because you can't afford to lose number 9. You got to protect him. Saints have had the best offensive tackle tandem in the league, arguably, the last 2 years. But they hit a bit of a November slumber last year. They can't fall face first into that slumber again this year. And so my guy RP3 got up this morning. He ranted, and I like the energy. I do. I just disagree. It's not time to get too concerned about these Saints. They lost a game to a rival. Your 28-3 joke doesn't hit quite as hard as it did about 27 hours ago. I get all of those things, but the Saints are going to be just fine. They won 6 games in a row before yesterday in an NFL where the Patriots lost at home to the Ravens, in an NFL where the Chiefs, Chargers, Rams are all hovering around 500, and 2-1-7 teams won yesterday, both of them on the road, Atlanta and Miami. And you hate that one of them came at your expense, but what I'm telling you is that the Saints, I believe, are going to be fine. Their two most precious assets that don't wear number 13 are back from injury. They've been able to come back slowly. I think this team is going to be right where it needs to be come December and playoff time. CD, I'll get some of your takes on that ball game. There's no doubt that it was embarrassing, but I don't think it's a sign of things to come and that people need to be overly worried about a 7-2 football team.
Exactly. It's one of those games where, you know, we heard it all week from Drew Brees, Sean Payton and company about how the 1-7 record shouldn't tell you anything about that team. It's a divisional game. Anything can happen in these ball games. We've seen it happen in the past for both sides. I'm not necessarily as concerned about it as anybody else is at this point in time. Now, mind you, if it happens again over the next couple weeks and you start slipping up, then there's a pattern and we can talk about it being a pattern and it's not a great one. Then we can start being a little bit more concerned. It's 1 week.
Not protecting Brees and not being able to stay on the field on third down, those are problems. But they haven't been long-lived problems. In fact, this Saints team, it's kind of like Burrow and LSU. They do things that we start to take for granted. So yesterday was a reminder for me more than anything else. You can't take it for granted. It's superhuman that Michael Thomas has more than 100 receptions already in the season. That is just just stupefying to me. And Kamara's coming back. I think this team is going to be just fine. Yeah, they left a lot of plays on the field. Yeah, the offensive line will not enjoy film session today. But I think they get back on track. And suddenly, the lead is even bigger in the NFC South. I know, you lose and it's not going to get bigger. Maybe I shouldn't put it that way. But suddenly, you don't lose ground to the Carolina Panthers, who lose in snowy Green Bay yesterday. Oh, by the way, first real snow game of the season that I can remember. That was a lot of fun.
It was amazing. And, you know, we're talking about the game, Ben, about the Saints losing. My question, and this is probably a question we'll talk about in the days to come, is would you rather lose now in week number 10 or lose in those final few weeks of the season and lose a lot of that momentum heading into the postseason?
And you know what? Here's some breaking news for you. I think the Saints will probably lose again in this regular season.
Yeah.
And it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. The Saints need to be at their best in late December and through January. That's the name of this game. And part of being your best is getting healthy. They've jumped over those hurdles, and I think they're going to be A-okay in that department. So Saints losing 26-9 to the 1-7 Falcons was embarrassing, but I think they're going to bounce back. I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt. They have been arguably the NFC's best team over the last 3 years. Punch it home in January, and nobody's going to give a hoot what happened on the 10th day of November. At least that's how I feel about the subject. All right, CD, we got a good show lined up today. We've had a lot of fun so far in our opening hour. Let's put a bow on it with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Prohibitive, as in favorite. Haven't talked to Stitch about the Raging Cajuns in our opening hour. It's understandable. They played on Thursday, but they are still absolutely crushing the game. Bowl eligible, 7-2. They are prohibitive favorites coming up against USA and South Al on the road this Saturday. I think they're going to be prohibitive favorites. Maybe even double-digit favorites for the remaining games in this season. Again, on the road at South Al and then home, Troy, rivalry game, ULM at home as well. I think there's a good chance they're double-digit favorites in all of them. And then they might be able to take on an App State team that has swept the Cackalackas after beating South Carolina on Saturday. Wouldn't that be a feather in the Cajuns' cap? But to get to that one, they'll have to win three more where they are prohibitive favorites. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They are your final stop to fill up the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. We'll come right back in. We'll keep taking your calls, and we'll talk what's next for LSU football. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. It's a sort of horse, but you know why. It's a good thing edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports back in and live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, back from T-Town, had a blast, and talking with you about it. The famous Clint D, he's riding shotgun. We got time for you in this hour. Hit us up quickly. We'll talk LSU-Bama and what comes next for the Tigers. 706-0111. Ruffin Rodrigue joining the fun in about 12 minutes. Our only scheduled guest of hour number two. And for all of you football fanatics on the high school gridiron, I'm raising my hand. I'm one of you. I'm going to break down the select and non-select brackets that were released yesterday with James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate. That comes your way from 6 to 6:30, all leading into Monday Night Football. And good news for Saints fans, either the Seahawks or the 49ers are catching an L on the West Coast in that one. But let's revisit LSU-Bama. Burrow cements the Heisman. Clyde Edwards-Helaire etches a place in LSU football history. And the Tigers they didn't pull off the impossible. They just took care of business, and they entered the ball game without putting as much emphasis on the ball game as they have in years past. They found a way not to make it their Super Bowl. They went into Bryant-Denny, and they put the game on its back and completely flattened the tide and the home crowd through the first 30 minutes. It was the best half of football that you could have imagined for LSU. Yes, it got tight late. Of course the Tide aren't going to fold. But LSU comes out on top, and now all of us left to start dreaming just a little bit. And rightfully so. What comes next? Well, I'll tell you. LSU's about to be, as I mentioned with the Raging Cajuns at the end of the last hour, a prohibitive favorite in the Tigers' final three games of this season. In fact, that's already starting. In Ed Orgeron's return to Oxford and the Grove this coming Saturday night, LSU's been installed as a 21-point favorite against the Rebels. It'll be even wider of a margin when Arkansas comes to town. Yeah, that same Arkansas team that just got their pants pulled down at home by Western Kentucky. Yikes. I do think the only potential slip-up opportunity is Thanksgiving Saturday at home against A&M. But the Tigers would really have to give that one back, because I think they'll be double-digit favorites in that one as well. Jimbo Fisher's Texas A&M team, maybe they're the ones that need to start their own little slogan. They're coming, and they ain't backing down. Because right now they're chasing not just Alabama, as everybody in the West has been, they're chasing LSU as well. And so we got a good question that came in at 103.7 The Game via Facebook. What's the toughest game left? It's still A&M, but LSU should still win. Now, what I'm here to tell you, I firmly believe that in LSU's next four games, including early December in Atlanta, LSU can afford to lose any one of those four games, and I think they're in. Seriously, any one of them. That's the amount of rope that four top 10 wins, including winning at Alabama, has bought Ed Orgeron's team. Also, as I said in the opening hour, I don't think they use that rope and hang themselves. I think there's a really good chance that LSU ends this thing at 13-0, and the Tigers are the number one seed going into the college football playoff. And from there, it's game on. But LSU on the West and Georgia on the East, they're in the same position. They've got a game in hand over the only team that really and truly can catch them, LSU over Bama and Georgia over Florida, which means that Georgia can still fall against Auburn in the South's oldest rivalry, get over on LSU in Atlanta, and they're in. And I'll continue to say as well, the only way to exclude Bama definitively from the Final Four is if Georgia beats LSU in Atlanta. If that's a game where Georgia comes in at 4 or 5 and LSU's number one and Georgia wins, they're both getting in. And somebody else is going to sit at the little kids table for New Year's, whether it be Oklahoma or Oregon, somebody else is going to that table with Alabama, by the by. And so for me, I think LSU has a chance to not only get in as the number one seed, they'll certainly be that tomorrow night. I mentioned this earlier. You could start dreaming even bigger than that. There's a chance this LSU team could supplant, in my mind, the 2011 team as the best to ever do it at LSU. Now, there are some things that the 11 team had going. Honey Badger at the top of the list. The other thing, let's be honest, on the road at Texas, ain't playing Oregon on a neutral field to start the season. I would even argue that at West Virginia was maybe a more difficult game than at Texas, just looking at all the pros that came out of that West Virginia team, especially on offense. And so that 2011 team played a more daunting schedule. But wow, what 2019 is doing right now, the skins that are on the wall, they have been undeniably right up there with one of the best we've ever seen. And I think it is a mental thing. I really do. As much as Burrow is physically talented, as much as some of these receivers are going to play for years in the NFL, I think Clyde is proving that he's going to be a back that can stick and stay in the modern-day league. All that may be true. LSU may have the highest paid defensive coordinator in football. All these things, sure. But they have bought in to Coach O, and I think Coach O has learned from mistakes prior to LSU and even while at LSU. He's learned from the Canada thing. His best buddy, Steve Ensminger, is the OC. He brought in a guy that he went and studied from the Saints an offseason ago in Joe Brady. And that seems to be working out fine for everybody. And they put less importance, as I mentioned at the top of this set, on getting too hyped too early and too soon for this Bama game. Mentally, this LSU team is right where they need to be. They believe they're handling it businesslike, and they've got swagger. And if that sounds like a team you may have heard of in the last 10 years, good, it should, because that's exactly how Nick Saban's Alabama teams have carried themselves. It's a big game because it's the next game. It's a big game because we're playing in it. Yeah, there's another team out there, but it's big because we're there. And that's the type of air that LSU took on inside Bryant Denny. It was a thrill to be there. And Clint, I'll tell you this too. There aren't many times that you can attend a game where it starts off, you're in the sun and you're hot, it ends, it's completely dark and you're cold. That's what happened in Bryant Denny. Wild temperature change throughout the day heading into the evening. Those epileptic-inducing strobe lights that were playing, I'm not a huge fan. I didn't like it when my alma mater, Georgia, did it to Notre Dame. I know it plays horribly on TV. I know that. It was okay, not great in the stadium. Not a big fan of doing it the millisecond after the home team scores a touchdown either. It just wasn't my favorite. I don't think LSU should shell out millions of dollars for LED lights, so let Georgia and Alabama have that. Spend your money on something different, cooler, better. But that was an unbelievable experience. The whole game day, you walk through town and it's completely silent except for the Go Tigers that comes out of people's mouths. You've got sad Alabama fans walking up and down what is a beautiful campus, and I'll give them that. It was an unbelievable atmosphere. They weren't nearly as hostile as I've seen in years past. I think even leading into the game, they knew something different could be coming. And I'll tell you this as well, and then I'll get your thoughts. I went back and forth with a good friend and a rabid LSU fan on this subject. I said, did we just attend one of the 3-5 most important LSU games of all time? And he made a great point that I'm going to agree with, and I'm going to shout it out on the radio. Yeah, it felt that way, but it depends on how this season finishes. And you hate to say that, but LSU 9-6, November 5, 2011, became less important because of what happened January 9, 2012. So how this season ends will affect the way that we look back on this LSU-Bama game, despite everything that happened in that stadium, despite Burrow and company coming back and giving high fives through the fence at the Baton Rouge Airport. But there is one thing that I responded to my friend, and I'll say it here now too. There is one big difference between 2011 and 2019. 2019 was an emotional tidal wave because of the last 8 years. 2011, hell, that was just the second straight year of beating Bama. Year before, Miles was eating grass. LSU won. End around to D'Angelo Peters, and they win that game. This year was about ending frustration for a state and an entire group of people that lasted almost a decade and spanned two head coaches and numerous coordinators. And it ended just so much. And I think that's why we'll think about this one differently than 2011.
Obviously, we'll think about it a lot more because you just scratched that itch that got the, I'm going to say, elephant off your back. After 8 long years, you finally beat Alabama on the road. I love how you brought it up, not as much a hostile environment. I feel like from time to time it felt like it was going to get hostile, especially this is the one complaint I had about the game from a fan perspective, is the fact that you just heard them boo every single time
LSU players were down.
That's just classless as all get out. I did not like that. I understand why they're doing it because obviously we're seeing a lot more of flopping, but a lot of those were just.
Let me tell you this. In a game like that, I think both offenses would have been okay with an occasional free timeout. Bama was trailing. They needed the clock to stop, and yet their fans were booing when LSU fans were hurt. I was like, well, forget the classlessness. You're just kind of an idiot. Learn how to football, bro. I mean, you're getting a free timeout. Set your offense up and try to come back from down 13, guy. For me, that was just dumb and incomprehensible. But Bama gonna Bama. All right, I got to stop gumping it up. I got to hit a break. On the other side, Ruffin Rodri joins us. He was there. We'll reminisce and get his thoughts on what comes next. After a brief timeout, that's what you got. More Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
I ran into this man, I don't know, let's see, maybe about 43 hours ago before LSU took down Bama in Tuscaloosa. Since then, I'm sure he's just been dancing, dancing, dancing. Ruffin Roderick back with us. How are you, Ruff?
Oh, cloud nine, man. Enjoy the weekend, the beautiful weather, not waiting for some cold weather. Man, it's all good.
I have said several times on this program, I didn't witness a hostile Bryant-Denny Stadium, and it's a little different than what I've seen in the past. What was your experience?
No, I've never had a bad experience with Alabama fans. The entitlement thing, and that's all whatever. But I've always even said that, Georgia's got classy fans. Tennessee, you got a bunch of. Florida's the worst. They're just an anomaly. They're the worst fans on earth. But Alabama fans, I think they were expecting this almost. That's the feeling I got from them because I was sitting really. I was on the edge of the lower section, but I was really close to a lot of their fans, and they were. I mean, they were touting Burrow. I can tell you that. I think they were more excited to see the president there than they were to see their own team. Because I think they had a feeling that they knew LSU was pretty darn good.
Was there a point in the fourth quarter where you thought this one could get tilted in a direction where maybe it's in doubt suddenly?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing was, this is a tale of athletes out of Alabama, obviously, five stars all over the place. And let's face it, why punt to the best punt returner we've ever seen? That guy has proved time and time again he's the best punt returner in the country by far. And then, a trick play, you catch the freshman off guard and fastest receiver in the country, takes it all the way to the house. And then second half comes, and I saw Amy Ensminger, Steve's wife, at halftime, and she says, "Ruffin, we can't get too confident." Da da da. I said, "I know what you're talking about." I said, "We're tied." I said, "The mentality I have as a fan is we're tied, and I hope the mentality from our players is that we're tied." And this is not gonna. This is a game that's gonna come down the wire. It was. Third quarter was tough. I said this, Ben, up by 20, we get the ball in the second half. You go down, you score, it's 40-13. The Bama fans start filing out. There's no doubt. And we were doing that, and then the tip ball, and they had an interception. That kind of threw everything off right there. And we let the crowd get back in it. And Alabama got smart. They started running the football with that monster running back. And he started breaking tackles and doing all the things that he does. And then, it was scary. And then I don't know how we let, deepest – every flag football parent out there knows if their son plays safety in football, deepest to the deepest, widest to the widest, don't let anybody get behind you. And what happens? No safety help on the – on Stingley and Devontae Smith takes it all the way to the house. And I told the Alabama fans why they were leaving before that play. They were all filing out, and I said, "I don't know why y'all leaving because this game isn't over." And sure enough, that play happened, and they were right back in it. They are a onside kick away from winning that football game and having a chance to win the football game. And it was scary, but we outplayed them in every aspect of the game. They had the big, big plays, and it was just an exciting football game. And the better team won, and the more deserving team won, and I'm glad it happened.
We're talking LSU Bama with Ruffin Roderick on 103.7 The Game. I'm not taking a thing away from Slinger, but it's clear that Joe Brady has made a huge difference with this team, and that's why reportedly they've reached a contract extension with him. They want to back up the Brinks truck, maybe even to the tune of $1.5 million a year. So, Ruffin, here's what I'll say, and then I'll get your 2 cents. We live in an era where you don't have to go take that group of five head coaching job to climb the ladder and make money. Dave Aranda's making $2.5 million as a coordinator. What do you make out of the fact that Brady might make 1.5 and not even be the coordinator?
Well, you know, he's a passing game coordinator, and he and Steve Ensminger have an amazing relationship. Steve's one of the easiest, you know, Steve Ensminger was my childhood hero. He's one of my favorite people, and Steve is as easy to get along with as anybody. And they get along, and Steve loves what Joe brought, and Joe loves what Steve can help him teach him as far as play calling. You know, Steve's a veteran of play calling. Back in the day when Eric Zaire was at Georgia, you know, I mean, he was offensive coordinator, and he was offensive coordinator at Texas A&M under R.C. Slocum. He's got a lot of experience, so Joe's getting that. And yeah, why not pay him and keep. Look, this is a different culture that LSU has right now. Not only a different culture than we've seen at LSU, but it's a different culture than you see anywhere around in the country. It's more like a Clemson culture, Dabo Swinney type, a player's coach, recruiter, motivator, and just hire great people and let them make great decisions. And that's exactly what Coach Ogeron is doing. And he knows he messed up with the Matt Canada hire. It was bad timing, just the wrong guy. And, you know, they resolved it. And guess what? You know, he promoted Steve, and then he brought in Joe. And look what's happening, man. So Joe Brady, you know, sign him up. He's 30 years old. He's going to learn so much in the next few years. And who knows what's going to happen. Steve may not want to do this for a couple more years and go back to just coaching. And Joe may want to be that coordinator and really build a monster before he takes a head job somewhere, because he knows he's not ready.
What comes next, not just for LSU, but the college football playoff? And I know I'm asking you to look deep into the crystal ball here, but I just have a hard time believing Bama won't get the benefit of the doubt. I don't think you could bury the Tide yet.
No, absolutely not. No, that was a great football game. And look, he's stacked with five stars. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and two, I think that running back's as good as anybody, the way he breaks tackles, as far as his style.
It helps when they use him.
What's that?
It helps when they use their running back. They didn't for the first time.
Oh, man. Oh, I know. Gee, thank God, right? No. Alabama's actually, you know, the eyeball test, whatever you want to call it, you know, you're going to have, you know, Clemson's going to win out. They're going to be in. Minnesota is hoping they get. But they're going to Iowa, and they're underdogs this weekend. You want to talk about a team that's not getting any respect. Man, the poor Golden Gophers, man. You know, row the flecked boat. Let's go. That's one of my favorite teams right now. I love watching them play. But, you know, you got a lot of, you know, Penn State's gone, and you got a lot of teams that are going to be, you know, hopefully to get in there. But thing is, Alabama is going to have to watch because I don't see LSU. No, in case something happens, I just don't see LSU losing to the teams on their schedule, especially the home game, you know, against A&M. And Ole Miss is kind of a tough spot this weekend, but we win that game. And, you know, SEC championship game, you can lose and LSU still gets in. So,
and actually, I think that's the only way to guarantee Bama's out, because then Georgia and LSU would have to be in.
That's the only way Bama gets out. And let me tell you something, man. That's a home game for Georgia. I still disagree with having it there every year. I wish they would move it around, maybe to New Orleans and Charlotte or whatever they can. But I think when we go to play Georgia in the SEC championship game, it's 75% Georgia fans. And, you know, it's a hard place to play in that Georgia Dome. So you never know. And Georgia's talented. You know, Georgia's extremely talented. So it'll be a great game, hopefully, if it comes in and happens. But, you know, you're right. I think Bama has a shot, but you know, I don't want him to. And why do you want to play just like what happened in 11? Do you want to play the same team twice? It's just it makes it a lot harder the second time around. So I hope it doesn't happen, but we'll see.
Ruffin, before we let you go, the latest that Ruffino's on the river, and I know as we're coming close to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, that the fans are going to have a chance to score something really cool at RuffinosLafayette.com.
Yeah, man, we got the Ruffinos. We have the gift cards Black Friday this year, the day after Thanksgiving, and Cyber Monday, the Monday after Black Friday. Buy $100 and you get $50 free in any increments. So you can buy $1,000 and you get $500 free. You get $5,000, you get $2,500 free. It's a great, great deal. We've always done, and especially the businesses in the Lafayette area that, you know, may be struggling or whatever for, you know, don't want to spend a whole bunch of money on Christmas parties and stuff. They can give their employees gifts and have all this free money to give them and help them out with their company. So it's been something we've done for a while, and love doing it. Rufino's is a great gift. People really appreciate it, and fantastic time.
It was fantastic to see you out in T-Town, brother. I hope you enjoyed the game as much as we did. Catch up soon.
All right, my man. You have a good one.
That's Ruffin Roderick, owner of Rufino's on the river. Clint, row the flecking boat. Didn't see that one coming. Thank you for enlightening us there, Ruff. We'll be right back in, and now we're going to throw some shade, and then we'll talk to James Buers in about 30 minutes about the prep playoff bracket, select and non-select. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Sometimes great audio just backs up your point. That's radio. That's kind of actually the name of the game. Let us explain. So I told you Minnesota, Dangerfield style. They're not getting any respect. How about the big win? Golden Gophers protect home field, beat Penn State, eliminate hashtag we are from college football playoff contention. And here's PJ Fleck. He was asked, Mr. Row the Boat, following the ball game about rankings. Here's what PJ Fleck said about Minnesota and those rankings.
Because this one was close against the fourth ranked team in America. People ask me where we think we should be ranked. We're 1-0 in the Penn State season. That's all we care about. That's all we care about. We wanted to be 1-0. We haven't talked about the rankings much. We're not sitting here saying we should be upset by them, proud of them, or celebrate them. It's more of just we wanted to be 1-0.
I think that's incredible. We are 1-0 in the Penn State season. And for me, LSU beating Bama means so much in this area. It's got a chance to resonate beyond this year. I said that on Friday's show. Too many people, I think, went into it with the attitude of, if not now, then when? While I understood that, I tried to flip it on its head for you. Okay, if you do it this time, then what? Then maybe you can Katie bar the door, and then maybe you've pushed that snowball over the top of the peak of the mountain, and it could just start rolling downhill on Alabama. And yet, I think for the context of this season, the most interesting question, who's going to join the party? That LSU and Clemson are almost certainly already booked for. I mean, I think those two have reservations. Ohio State, they've put in for reservations, and they are next in line. The difference between Clemson and Ohio State, I don't have to tell you. It's the competition. Ohio State's still going to have to get by Penn State, Michigan, and then you would think Minnesota in the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. If not many, then maybe Whiskey. Still, they have to play three teams with a relative heartbeat. And they're going to turn America into huge Jim Harbaugh Michigan fans right after Thanksgiving. That's hard to do, but I believe that's the reality. Because while people may not be universally sick of Ohio State, I think enough people would like to see some new blood in the college football playoffs. Because really, what we're used to, I mean, it's Alabama, Clemson, and most typically, Ohio State and Oklahoma. Sometimes Georgia gets in. Sometimes, who else has been in and won that bad boy? I'm trying to think. Oregon's been in it before, right? We've seen occasionally a little bit of different blood, but really it's been the same blue bloods that are usually in. LSU's cracked the code. I think we all feel that way. Who's going to join the party? LSU, Clemson, then who? Probably Ohio State, you would say. After that, it just gets really wide open. And I think that's where we're going to be tomorrow night when the second batch of college football playoff rankings are released. I think it will be LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, in that order. Then what? Clint, I've thought about this for a long, long time. I think they're going to put Georgia at 4, and I don't think the Bulldogs deserve it. That's my official stance. And I'll call my shot Babe Ruth style. What is it? 5:53 p.m.? So I'm calling my shot like 27 hours in advance. I think they're going to put Georgia at 4. I don't think Georgia belongs there. I don't think Bama belongs there. I know that Oregon, Oklahoma don't belong there. So my problem is I don't know who to freaking put there. And historically, at least in recent history, when humans that want to talk about the eyeball test are in doubt, who do they typically go with?
They go with a blue blood.
Usually one.
Yeah.
Crimson and cream blood. Yes. And so that's the thing. I think it would be a minor travesty if Alabama only dropped one spot from 3 to 4 after losing at home to LSU. But I also don't think it's an impossibility because I'm not sure who all has really deserved it. I think that you could make a case to put Minnesota there. Big win that they had at home against Penn State. If Minnesota was there, you'd have no complaints from me. None. Baylor doesn't belong there. Sorry. Not willing to punch their ticket yet. Minnesota's undefeated start has been more impressive than Baylor's. That's just my two cents. But it's just that's part of where we're at right now. It's hard to identify a number 4. And I think that's why a lot of LSU fans are at least sort of kind of monitoring their 6. Because Bama probably won't lag too far behind them. My guess is Bama drops no lower than 6. I would say that it probably goes Georgia 4. Man, it gets really tough. Again, you can mix it all up. I'm going to say, Clint, I'm going to say that they go Georgia 4, Minnesota 5, and Alabama 6. I'm going to say right now that's how they go. I'm not saying should. I'm going to say that's how they go.
And I think that'd be perfectly fine by me. I think that'd be fine by a lot of people because of the fact that you're giving Minnesota that opportunity to be in that conversation because they have every chance to do so. Of course, their final three games will tell you a lot. Obviously, the last one against Wisconsin, if they manage to run the table and be undefeated, head into that Big Ten title game, they definitely have a strong, strong case of getting into the CFP.
Underdogs on the road to take on Iowa this week. That says a lot. It's a great point by Ruffin Rodrigue. We used it for throwing shade, and now it's jumping a segment again. So I'm okay with Minnesota maybe at 5. Right? But don't expect Bama to drop lower than 6. The thing is, they don't have quality wins, but Bama's season will be judged by a quality loss. And that's crazy because nobody else would get that benefit of the doubt. Historically, nobody has. I mean, nobody's going to say, you know what? LSU is this team's quality loss. I think they're going to get in, except for Bama. That's what's just so, out of this world weird about the whole thing. Because Georgia, right or wrong, will be able to hang its hat on top 10 wins at home against Notre Dame and with the annual road game against Florida. Right now, that's where they'll hang their hat. They'll have a chance against Auburn later. That's likely to be a highly ranked Auburn team. Who is Alabama beating? What Bama game are you going to point to and say, you know what, this win really proved to us that they belong? There's not a game on the schedule where you're going to be able to say that so far. Nary a one. So these college football playoff rankings should be incredibly intriguing tomorrow night and going forward during this 2019 regular season. All right, here's the deal. 2 hours so far. We've had a lot of fun. LSU-Bama exclusive, not quite, but heavy. We have talked some Saints. We jumped around the college football landscape, gave a shout-out to the Cajuns in our 4 o'clock final word. But we're going all prep for the final half hour of our program. We have playoff brackets. 5 teams from the area, we'll include Lake Chuck, are in the Class 5A playoffs. 8 in Class 4A, 3 in Class 3A, and it continues to go from there. You know we have to discuss. We got a perfect player for that part. James Buers of the Acadian Advocate will be with us for the entirety of our 6 to 6:30 stretch. And then do not forget Monday Night Football, big time game. A couple of teams with very few losses. One of them with no losses. Does that change tonight? San Fran hosting Seattle. Pregame show at 6:30 when we're done and kickoff right after 7. That means you're in the perfect place here in Acadiana. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Back in for the final half hour, and it's all prep football related. It's a great time to be alive because it's playoff time. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back at it on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next half hour, James Buers doing a great job with the Acadiana Advocate, prep sports reporter. And he's all over the football beat. Now he's with us all over the Ardco Equipment Hotline. James, happy Monday. Happy playoff time to you. How the heck are you?
I'm doing well, Ben. Just, as we were just talking beforehand, just kind of trying to compress all the information that is the playoff bracket because there's a lot to go through. But I'm starting to get there, so I'm feeling more confident about what we're going to see in the playoffs.
I'm very confident about your ability to break down the number one overall seed in Class 5A. I wasn't sure they'd climb as high as they did, but kudos to Matt McCullough and the Wreckin' Rams, top seeded in 5A. They'll take on number 32 Benton in the opening round game. But just in general, James, a playoff bracket that includes five teams from District 3 5A, Sam Houston, the 10 seed, Barb, the 14 seed, they'll host, like Acadiana, on the road, number 25 Southside, number 27 Como. But let's reflect on Acadiana and the accomplishment that is the top seed and the highest classification in this non-select bracket.
Yeah, no, it's a terrific feat by the Rams. And, you know, I know they've been high seeds before, even the number one seed before. But first of all, for them to go undefeated in the regular season, I mean, that hadn't happened since 1984. I mean, for all the success Ted Davidson had as the head coach of the Rams, you know, winning multiple state championships. They were never undefeated in the regular season entering the playoffs. So for them to do that this year, and then some of the scores they put up, you know, putting up 82 points, a school record, you know, 70 points a couple of times, 64 points. I mean, I think they were outscoring their opponents by well over 40 points during district play. It just speaks to what kind of team this Rams team is. But, you know, they're going to be really challenged in the playoffs. You know, assuming they get through Benton in the first round and even in the second round, probably playing a Thibodeau team who I was really impressed with when Thibodeau came and played Pro Bridge earlier this year. So that'll be an interesting second round matchup if that shakes out. But, you know, they could run into Zachary in the quarterfinals. And, of course, they played Zachary in the quarterfinals last year before Zachary ended up winning the state championship. And Zachary still has Keelan Brown at quarterback. He's a really, really good player. Also, Chris Hilton, their wide receiver, is probably going to be a Power 5 receiver when he finishes up his senior year. So it's a difficult side of the bracket, and there will certainly be some challenges for Acadiana. But I don't know that anybody can stop their running game at this point because what they're doing, you know, Dylan Monette, Lucky Brooks, Tyvon Zeno, those guys have been tremendous. And then defensively, they've been stout all year. So it's a really good Rams team.
All right, I don't think you probably know volumes about the airline Vikings, but I will ask your general thoughts about Southside's chance maybe of being competitive going up to North Louisiana in the first round game. Same thing for Como. We know how much talent they have. They're heading to Slidell. So again, understanding that you haven't covered airline and Slidell, what do you think about the draw? Any chance that the 25 or 27 seed pull an upset advance to the second round?
I think it's going to be tough for Southside. You know, that's a long trip to airline. You know, I would think it, you know, especially their first time in the playoffs, you know, I would think it'd be a tough matchup for them. But again, they put up points on basically everybody this year, Southside has. So, you know, I love Dylan Monette, their quarterback. He's had an outstanding year. Their two receivers, Jack Stewart and Rhett Teliquin, are both among the top five in receiving this year in our area. So, I think they will pose some problems to airline, but again, it's a long trip. But you know, one thing Josh Bono said yesterday was that he's just, you know, they're in the playoffs in their first year in the LHSA. I mean, that's something to celebrate regardless of who you're playing in the first round. So I think they're happy to be there and will give it their best shot this week. But as for Como, it's an interesting match. You know, Slidell has this really terrific running back, Harlan Dixon. I think he's going to be a load for them to stop, but Cuomo's been playing well lately. I know they lost the regular season finale to Barr, but they had a lot of self-inflicted mistakes in that game that kind of turned a competitive game in the first half into a game that Barr kind of controlled in the second half. So I think Cuomo, if they play their A game, they have a chance to beat anybody, but Fidel, certainly with Dixon, is going to be a tough challenge for them.
We'll continue to review the non-select side with James Buers of the Acadian Advocate. Don't forget, after this final break we got coming up, we'll move over to STM, LCA, VC. How about three top seeds on the select side? But that's all coming in the future. James, as we go down to 4A, you have four teams that are hosting first-round games from this area. Number 9, Eunice, defending 3A champs, going to welcome in Plaquemine. Number 5, Carrancrow's got Salmon coming in from the New Orleans area. Bro Bridge, the 6th seed, will play host to number 27, South Terrebonne. And number 10, Westgate, has a team from the area, number 23, Livonia. I'll get your reaction to these teams that are hosting and maybe a path that you like.
Yeah, you know, I think I like Bro Bridges' draw, to be honest. I know they have Carl on that side of the bracket, but I think they could win a couple of games. You know, and same thing with Westgate. Westgate's also on that side of the bracket. You know, Livonia is a team that gave Bro Bridge a lot of problems last week, but Bro Bridge rallied in the second half to win that game. So I'd be interested to see what kind of challenges Livonia gives Westgate. Westgate, of course, lost their regular season tonight at Carrancrow, but I thought they played well in the second half before Carrancrow kind of figured them out offensively and was able to kind of shut them down. You know, Eunice has an interesting draw as well. Plaquemine is always a super talented team. It seems like LSU has a kid or two from Plaquemine every year. So it'll be interesting to see how Eunice matches up with them. And then, you know, Carrancrow, you know, they could run into Easton in the quarterfinals. And I know Easton isn't as good as they have been, but keep in mind they were the runner-up last year. They still have a shot at Clayton, that running back, a really good player. Cedric Van Fran, and one of Easton's linemen, I think, is committed to Georgia. So that's a really talented team as well. So it'll be interesting. I think all of these, you know, 4A teams will face a stiff challenge if they're able to advance to the third round. But, you know, I think I like Carrancrow at this point in the season the most. I was really shaky about them after they lost Traylon Frazier, but they seemed to rebound really well, and I was super impressed by that win against Westgate in the regular season finale. So I would probably keep my closest eye on the Bears going forward.
And you and I were certainly there at the open-air Crow Dome. Kendrell Williams, over 240 yards, 4 touchdowns on the ground. I will tell you that if Carrancrow gets past their second-round game, James, and I do expect that to be Northwood of Shreveport, that's no due disrespect to Rain. Of course, the Wolves as a 21 seed are traveling up to North Louisiana. I am told that Northwood Shreveport team is awfully good. They played and lost to Evangel, one other game on the season, but that's an 8-2 team. They got a lot of talent. Here's what I'll tell you. Maybe a bold proclamation. If Carrancrow gets past number 12 Northwood Shreveport in the second round, I really think it's not that far-fetched to think of Carrancrow as a state semifinalist this year. I think there's a chance that Carrancrow can compete with number 4 Tioga, maybe even number 20 Warren Easton. So it's odd, but I feel like potentially Carrancrow's tougher game could be in the second round than maybe even the quarterfinals, James.
No, that could certainly be the case. And, you know, it's funny, too. A couple of years ago, Carrancrow played Easton in the first round, and that was a year, I know you remember this, when Carrancrow had a bunch of young players contributing. They had injuries throughout the year, and Easton just overwhelmed them. I mean, Lance LeJean, the quarterback, had a terrific game that night, and it was clear that, you know, Carrancrow had a lot of work to do, but they've grown up since then. A lot of those linemen that were playing when they were freshmen are now juniors and seniors. So if they do happen to match up with Easton in the quarterfinals, that would be a fun matchup, and they certainly have a much better chance this go-around.
We'll go now to Class 3A as we continue our visit with James Buers. Playoff brackets are out. We're excited about it. And the top seed from our area is number 7, Church Point. The Bears are going to take on Frederick A. Douglass High School in Church Point with a win. There's a chance that it could be number 7, Church Point at number 23, Jennings, in the second round. Those two teams, by the way, are the same quadrant of the bracket as Kaplan and Crowley. It's just an area affair in Class 3A, James.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, possible Church Point Jennings matchup. That would be really interesting. Of course, Jennings would have to get through number 10 Carroll in the first round. They're, you know, Jennings is traveling for that first round game. But Jennings has Travis Etienne, the Clemson running back, his little brother Trevor Etienne, is plays for Jennings and is apparently a really good player. Unis actually played Jennings earlier this year and won that game. I think they did a really good job defensively in that game. So maybe Church Point can lean on what Jennings, what Unis was able to do if they happen to play Jennings. But I really like this Church Point team. You know, they lost their first two games of the season, had a bunch of underclassmen playing on defense in that season opener against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame, frankly, just kind of overwhelmed them in the season opener. And then they lost to Southside. But since then, they've really got on a roll. They've gotten some guys healthy. Roddy Dupuy broke the Church Point rushing record during the season. So that's a pretty nice accomplishment. But I think defensively, them just getting healthier has been a big boon for them. They beat Iota, that pretty much decided the district championship. They also beat Northwest, which is a pretty good team. A Northwest team that I think people should keep an eye on. They've gotten hot later in the season to kind of get themselves into the playoffs. I think their win against Iota a couple weeks ago really put them in position to make the playoffs because, I mean, keep in mind, this was a team that's made the quarterfinals three times in the last 4 years, and they were in danger of missing the playoffs, but they've gotten hot at the right time, so I'd keep an eye on them. Also, St. Martinville is a team that's been kind of up and down this year, but they've got some maturing young players, and I kind of like their draw, to be honest. We'll see how they match up with the Union Parish team, but I like their draw as well.
An opportunity for St. Martinville, a top four seed in 4A last year, to maybe make some waves in 3A. James, quickly, we'll go to Class 2A. Number 13, Lake Arthur, taking on number 20, Lauraville. Welsh will be on the road, as will Port Barry. So four area teams in the Class 2A bracket. Let's stick with that Lake Arthur-Lauraville game. How would you handicap it?
Yeah, no, I think Lauraville making the playoffs, it speaks a lot about what Terry Martin has done with his program in his second year being in charge. You know, keep in mind, Lauraville missed the playoffs last year and only won one game, which was the regular season finale. And, you know, keep in mind, Terry jumped in late at Lauraville, you know, after leaving Brobridge. He started with the program about in mid-July, and so he was kind of, you know, start behind the eight ball, so to speak. And then they had some injuries early in the season, including the quarterback, Zy Alexander, that really set them behind. So they struggled last year, but for them to get in the playoffs, and you know, I know they're not hosting this year, but, you know, I think they're going to have a chance to get the Lake Arthur team that has some good players. I know their quarterback and running back are two pretty good players. So it'll be interesting to see if they can possibly upset Lake Arthur, but it's still a big achievement for them to get to the playoffs.
All right, we've gone 5A through 2A. Our single-A folks, don't get mad at us. We've run out of time. I need to throw it to a break. Don't forget this Friday, football night in Acadiana. We'll keep previewing our first round of the playoffs from 6 to 6:30 this Friday on 103.7 The Game. No STM, that's okay. But Clint will still have football night in Acadiana post-game at a reasonable time slot to get you out of your Friday and closer to your Saturday. We finish up our Monday next with the select side, divisions 2 through 4. So stick with us. James Buers, he'll come right back in after this brief timeout. So will we. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back at it one final time. It has been a busy Monday. It's always my easiest show of the year. I tell people that every single year. Monday after the Bama game, give them the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Get out of the way. So, yeah, we've been doing a lot of LSU-Bama reaction, jubilant, triumphant celebration. Of course, on the other side of the spectrum, we talk some Saints, but we end up, as we do every Monday in the 6 o'clock hour, talking prep football with James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate. And James, good enough to stick with us on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. James, I know we're not going to preview Division One, but it should be fun this year. We just don't have area teams there. Rummel's the one seed. Catholic of Baton Rouge, the two seed. John Curtis, the 3 seed, and Brother Martin, the 4 seed. If this one's chalked to the semifinals, it would provide some unbelievable matchups.
Yeah, no, it really would. I mean, Rumble's defense this year has been outstanding from what I hear. You know, they beat John Curtis earlier this year in what sounded like an epic game. And, you know, it'd be pretty fun to see a John Curtis Catholic High matchup in the semifinals. Obviously, STM played Catholic High earlier this year in an epic game in its own right. But I forget the final score. It was in the 50s. But yeah, no, it would be really cool to see the Catholic High Baton Rouge Bears versus John Curtis. And then, of course, if Rumble saw either of these teams in the state finals, it'd create probably the most watched game of any of the state championships just because there's talent all over the field. Rumble has a wide receiver committed to LSU, and, of course, Curtis always has studs, and Catholic Baton Rouge is as well coached as any of the teams. So that should be a really fun division for sure.
All right, let's get to where we have our bread buttered in Acadiana, Division II. And you've got two teams that are in this bracket, St. Thomas More, the top overall seed. Cougars will have a bye, as I mentioned, this weekend, and then they'll get the winner of Evangel and E.D. White as an 8-9 game. The only other game involving an area team, Turlings Catholic, a 7 seed. They're going to be at home to take on Parkview Baptist. Winner there gets De La Salle in the second round. So if you don't mind, give me the path for the Cougars as well as the Rebels, and is there any chance that they meet in the state final?
Well, I think it's going to be really tough for Turlings. And once again, they're playing Parkview Baptist in the first round. They went to Parkview Baptist last year in the first round and lost the game. They were, I think, up by double digits at one point, but just kind of lost it late in the second half, you know, ended up losing that game. And, you know, even if Turlings can get through Parkview Baptist this year at home, you know, they probably have to run into De La Salle. We had a great season once again. STM played De La Salle in the semifinals a couple of years ago and lost that game in a really, really good game at Tulane Stadium. So it's going to be tough for the Rebels, but I really like STM's chances. You know, keep in mind, the team STM played in the semifinals last year, St. Charles Catholic, is no longer even in that division. They're in Division III. So I don't really see a team on their side of the bracket that's going to give them a tough challenge. You know, I think if they saw Evangel, you know, Evangel's always really good, even E.D. White. But, you know, I just don't see it, to be honest. I think the Cougars are going to get back to the state finals, and frankly, I think they're going to win it all.
It would be an incredible run if they did it for the second time in just 3 years. Now let's move to Division III. Yeah, we're going no huddle style here. As we finish up B2BS, James Buehr is going to have to stick around for a second segment. LCA, the top seed in this bracket. Good chance that they take on number 8 Ascension Episcopal in the second round if the one and only Blue Gators can beat Holy Savior Menard. So before we preview the bottom of that bracket, what do you make of LCA, Ascension Episcopal, and then a potential semifinal matchup between the LCA Knights and either Dunham or Isidore Newman?
Yeah, no, it would be kind of cool to see two area teams play in the quarterfinals, but I don't know that Ascension could keep up with LCA. That says a lot more to me about LCA than it does Ascension, because I think Ascension is a very good football team, has been playing great defensively during district play, but LCA just seems to be on a different level this year. I know they've had their ups and downs offensively, but their defense is just way too elite to me, and it is going to keep them in every game, and of course they have an elite return specialist in Sage Ryan. So I think LCA is probably going to get to at least the semifinals, where they could run into Newman and Arch Manning, the grandson of Archie and the nephew of Eli and Peyton. He's been as good as advertised, apparently, and he's just a freshman. So I'd love to see that matchup between Arch Manning and LCA's defense in the semifinals. I think that'd be fantastic.
All right, we'll go to the bottom of that bracket, James. Notre Dame. The Pios are the number 2 seed. Of course, they're only lost this year at home to LCA. The Pios have a chance to take on a familiar foe in the second round as well. Brent Indest and the Catholic New Iberia Panthers, if they can get past St. Thomas Aquinas in New Iberia, they'll take on Notre Dame in Crowley. That one usually is reserved for the Dome. This time around, it may be a second-round game, like I mentioned, in Crowley.
Yeah, and I'm sure Catholic High and Notre Dame are loving the fact that they can meet up again in the quarterfinals. Of course, I say that tongue-in-cheek, though, because they're probably tired of playing each other at this point. I think they've played 10 times in the last 8 years, including twice in the state championship game the last couple of years. So they'd probably like to avoid each other as long as possible, but unfortunately for them and fortunately for us, they most likely will meet up in the quarterfinals. And, you know, I don't know if Catholic High is as strong as they've been in previous years, but they still got a terrific quarterback in Trey Amos. And Trey Henry, their fullback, is having a really good year for them as well. The Pios, of course, are trying to kind of rebound after losing C.J. Thibodeau for the year. He's committed to Air Force. He sustained an injury in the last day Christian game and is out for the rest of the year. So that's a tough blow for them. But you'd like Louis Cook's team's chances, even with injuries. They seem to rebound well, and they still got a terrific quarterback in Ben Broussard. So that would be a really fun match in the quarterfinals for sure.
All right, quickly, we're going to get to Select Division 4, VC, the Eagles, the top overall seed. They'll take on Ascension Christian in the first round. The number two seed, it looks a lot like that Division 3 bracket. It's another area team, Opelousas Catholic with Hamilton Christian in town. We'll give a shout-out. St. Edmund, Sacred Heart, also in this bracket. They're also traveling in the first round. Does this one feel like it's inevitable and that we'll have a rematch of an early regular season game between VC and OC?
I honestly don't know about that, Ben. You know, VC is a very, very strong team. They've been tested throughout their schedule, including the non-district schedule. They've played Kaplan. Kaplan, by the way, I didn't mention earlier, I think has a really good chance of making a little run. They're getting hot at the right time. But VC played Kaplan earlier this year, won that game. But VC could have to run into Country Day in the quarterfinals. Of course, Country Day has a terrific quarterback in Justin Ivietta, who committed to Tulane. So that would be a really fun matchup between Drew Leger and Justin Ivietta in the quarterfinals. And then Calvary Baptist is lurking on VC's side of the bracket. Calvary Baptist is a terrific quarterback in Cade Hart, who was an all-state baseball player and has passed for over 10,000 yards in his career. So VC is going to be really tested even before they were to get to the state championship game. And, of course, OC could run into Catholic of Pointe-Coupee in the quarterfinals, who they lost to during district play. Catholic of Pointe-Coupee handled OC 44-10, albeit OC had a ton of penalties and turnovers in that game. But it would be interesting to see if they matched up again. And, of course, Southern Lab is still in this bracket. Riverside beat Country Day in the regular season finale, so they're still a dangerous team. So both VC and OC are really going to be challenged. I don't think it's an easy road for either of them getting to the state championship.
I know that we're all ready for the path. Select, non-select, we want it all. It's playoff time. James, thanks for helping us break it down the only way that we can with a full half hour. Thank you, brother. Have a great week. We'll catch you this weekend.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Have a good one, man.
That's James Bewers with the Acadiana Advocate, one of our great guests today. Gus Cattingill, Ruffin Rodriguez as well. And now we got to get the heck out of here for one of the best Monday night football games of the year, San Fran, Seattle. Somebody that the Saints are competing with for NFC playoff positioning is going to catch an L today, and that's a great thing. For Clint, my name is Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. Monday Night Football, next.